Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Kenny Atkinson, one of the three finalists for the Lakers head coaching job. We will break him down. It's a full Kenny Atkinson scouting report next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends, no matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts, never behind a paywall, always fresh Lakers content available for you. And if you want to listen to a second Locked On podcast, how about Locked On Nets with our friend Adam Armbrecht? Just kidding.
From the old country.
The chef's kiss of the introductions.
Adam Armbrecht, host of one of the co-hosts
of the Munich Armbrecht.
Right. The Armbrecht. with Doug Norrie. And you guys have your own problems over there, which we will get into. Yeah, I mean, you got a couple issues over there in Nets land.
Nothing we've noticed.
What are you talking about?
We'll fill you in, Adam.
Perfect.
But we wanted to bring you in because of the whole Atkinson thing. What happened to Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because when you invited me on and I knew we were going to talk about Atkinson, I cast my mind back to when he was coaching the Brooklyn Nets. And the first thing you do is go back and look at the record and you say, even for a developmental team, wouldn't have hurt had a few more wins over the course of time there, especially in the Eastern Conference. But I think he was a victim of circumstance, right? When Sean Marks gets brought in and you get Josiah in there, you're talking about trying to shift the culture, right? That fun word that everyone likes to throw out. But they had a lot of young players. You turn over a lot of contracts. You get D'Angelo Russell and effectively reclimate his career. I mean, he was going the wrong way as far as a prospect was concerned. You get him back on track. You maximize Spencer Dinwiddie. You reclimate Joe Harris. You're there for the beginning of Jared Allen's career. You're there for the back end of Brooke Lopez's career, which is where he develops his perimeter shot. All of these positive things. And also, not a lot of winning. And then ultimately, when superstars come in, it does seem to be a fit, right? Kenny Atkinson is a guy who is going to drive hard for all of the little fine details and really get the most out of young players. This is why, when it comes up as being a potential for the Lakers job, I don't entirely get it. Now, things change and coaches develop time. Outside of that stint, he's been seemingly a great assistant coach on a lot of staffs. But I just don't know what would he be bringing to the Lakers. Not that he's not talented and a good head coach, but what would he be bringing that LeBron James, that Anthony Davis, that the veterans on that team would be receptive to?
Yeah, that's interesting, Adam, because I wanted to ask you specifically about the reputation Atkinson has as a player development guy, whether you think it's potentially just reductive in the sense that he happened to have this young team in Brooklyn that had a couple seasons or at least a season that was better than expected. Therefore, he got labeled the guy that's really good with developing young players or working with these young guys versus he happens to bring a lot to the table from what you've seen as a coach. And he just happened to do it with these young guys, but that's not all that he does.
Yeah. So I guess the example would be in the current Nets roster, Bruce Brown. Right now, there's a hold over there in Jacques Vaughn on this coaching staff. The staff has gone through a lot of changes under Steve Nash, but now Steve Nash is the head coach that no one thinks is capable of, and he's maybe proven it, of adjustments and doing certain things well from that standpoint. But Bruce Brown went from being a point guard-ish in the league with the Detroit Pistons to now all of a sudden being incredibly versatile, right? Being a very switchable defender. He's evolved his three-point shooting game over this past season for Brooklyn. And is that because of Steve Nash or because of Kyle Korver, who was on the staff? Maybe, maybe not. So I think you're right in the sense of sometimes circumstances are what attribute the success or failure of what's gone well, right? If the Nets hadn't dealt with everything they had over the past two plus seasons, would Steve Nash be regarded as, oh, he's the next young mind in the NBA that's going to figure out how to manage superstar egos and win championships? Well, we all know the trail of sadness that is the Brooklyn Nets last handful of years since what we thought was going to be the start of a championship run. The thing that I would say about Atkinson, again, going back to his time with the Nets, he was a guy that wanted to use everyone top to bottom on the roster. So if you're talking about just philosophically, he wants to maximize what he gets out of every player. He wants to go deep into rotations. And I think what he is good at is looking at players and saying, what do you do very well? Let's accentuate that. Let's put you in positions to succeed at that. Again, that seems more applicable to either young developmental teams or teams that, even if they have young superstars, they're in their first or second year where they're still moldable, right? They're still coachable. LeBron James is not being met with, you know what, I think you do great and what I'd love to see you do a bit more, right? Like you're or Russell Westbrook. And it's not even a knock on these guys. Like, their games are their games. You need to figure out how to make the pieces work in and around them. And is Kenny Atkinson or any of these candidates a better fit or more valuable than Frank Vogel? I don't know, right? Sometimes these changes get made for change sake because you're not jettisoning LeBron James. You're not getting rid of the players that maybe didn't work out here. So you try to make the next piece fit. I think Kenny brings good things to the table. I don't know if he's the needle mover for the Lakers in terms of turning it around in the short term.
Well, it's funny, but like, none of these guys, I think people like Darvin Ham in part because he, you know, does have at least a little bit of a Laker connection. People kind of remember it's a good story. But as much as anything, you can project anything you want into whatever you want Darvin Ham to be. You can't do that with Atkinson. Certainly can't do that with Terry Stotts. You talked about, you know, his ability to kind of take players and get the most out of what you're giving him. Set LeBron, AD, and, oh, by the way, Russell Westbrook, who may not be going anywhere, people. We keep having to mention this. He may not be going anywhere. Setting those three aside, which I know is hard to do, it is very difficult to project what the Lakers will have on the roster next year. They could have a mix of young G Leaguers trying to make their way up the league. They could have, you know, a mix of vets like they had last year, maybe something in between, maybe a second round pick if they can buy their way in. Does that kind of vagueness around the roster and what they just might be available to them, does that work in favor of Atkinson or against it?
It would come down to, I think, what does the rest of the staff look like, and what's the buy-in from LeBron James? I mean, we talk about this all the time with Kevin Durant, right? You're making a move. Kevin Durant's come out and said, I don't get in, you know, into the front office and make those kind of decisions. Maybe LeBron is a little bit different in this regard. I think he is more willing to admit that he's more hands-on.
It depends if the move went well or not.
Right. It's like, yeah, if we went from winning championships, I feel like I pretty much
he's
did it all.
Very, very into letting you know the thoughts that he shared towards the roster that worked out really well.
Yeah.
And that's a part of this. So if LeBron buys into Kenny Atkinson and it's maybe this understand, and this comes out to Kenny Atkinson too, right? I mean, this could be his second and last bite of the apple as a head coach if he takes on this role. So he probably wants some assurances of, listen, I know what your game is. I know what you're going to do, but do I have control to take on some of the younger players on this roster and maybe redefine what their roles are around you? And that may be in conflict to the way you look at them, LeBron, or what your expectations are for them are. You know, whether or not Westbrook.
So it's you're saying, yeah. If I understand, like, I'm not going to control you. I'm not going to tell you exactly what you need to do, LeBron, but I'm going to make, you got to give me sort of some agency over the other guys.
Yeah. Horton Tucker, right? I mean, it's 21. He has talent. There's value there. Kenny needs to be able to get his hands on him. If you could somehow move off of Westbrook and maybe you have to dump it. I almost misspoke there for assets. Good Lord. But let's say that you were dumping the money of Westbrook to get back a couple of guys that maybe don't look like on the surface. Are they that valuable, right? Where are they going to fit in? Well, if they have the right traits underneath Kenny Atkinson's system, then we can actually maximize what they are. And I think this is what happens a lot of times with superstar-driven teams. You have to almost look at not the player and the production in any of their other one spots. It's how do they benefit off of having a superstar, right? You're watching the Mavericks right now. They're going to lose. But how many players, like Spencer Dinwiddie, you ended up there, right? How many players benefit even just by having Luka there, right? All of a sudden, those open looks, they only knock down, at the time of this taping, 33% of their open three-point shots in this series against the Golden State Warriors. That's a byproduct of having superstar talent and creating that type of spacing. Now it's their job to knock those down. So I think those are the kind of traits you try to identify in the young talent in the draft picks. And you say, if I have, you know, 40% of this roster, 50% of the roster is for me, Kenny Atkinson, to mold in my vision, well, then maybe we can have success. And if it works on the court, then LeBron will buy in. I think at the very least, LeBron is smart enough to realize that, right? He can see what isn't working and be willing to take what is there and being productive for him.
The other half of this, of course, and what seemed to go wrong in Brooklyn was that superstar aspect of it. You know, the relationships and the culture that was built with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. The Lakers obviously have their own superstars. So what kind of fit would that be? That's the next question we'll talk about with Adam, and we'll do it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Prize Picks. Okay, Laker fans, you've been hearing me tell you about Prize Picks for months. If you have not signed up yet, you are missing out because this is daily fantasy made easy. You're going to love this app for the NBA and mixed sport pick'ems. And for a limited time, there's a no-brainer of an offer for all of our users. Users get $50 for free if a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point, 1 point. Take like Steph. Take like
don't take a Laker or a Net. They're not,
right.
They're
do not take a Laker or a Net. Don't maybe take Draymond Green, but take. He hasn't been scoring much, but take again, Steph, take Jimmy Butler, take Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. You can figure this out. You're not idiots. But again, 1 point using the code NBA, and this is exclusive, available just to Locked On fans who use the code NBA. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the entire market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. They offer the superstar players, which you would expect, but also bench players that only get a handful of minutes each game. And this is the best part, the mixed sport entries. You could take the over on Steph Curry three-pointers made combined with the under on Mookie Betts home runs in the same entry. Keep it weird, fun, interesting. Use the award-winning app in both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's easy. It's safe, fast withdrawal. So go to prizepicks.com, use the promo code NBA, or go to the App Store, download the app. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you honestly don't know what you're missing.
Okay, so the story, as you typically read it, Adam, is that you get, you know, Atkinson, who builds up this plucky bunch of what turned out to be good future NBA players. You make the
out
playoffs.
Of the Nets, but good future. NBA
right, but for other people. That's how the Lakers do it, too. You build something up, and the culture is great, and everybody likes these guys, and then the superstars come in, the culture changes, and suddenly Kenny Atkinson isn't a good fit anymore. He's not a good fit with Durant. He's not a good fit with Kyrie. Or DeAndre Jordan. Like I said, the superstars come in.
That was a deal breaker for Kenny Atkinson.
No, listen, well, I mean, by the way, but isn't that a great example though? Right. Because at the time, so DeAndre Jordan is brought into Brooklyn because Kevin Durant says, I want my buddy to get paid. And at that time, like Kenny Atkinson is looking at it as everybody was and going, what is this? You know, what is DeAndre Jordan? We all get what the, you know, a fun stat line that he has the highest field goal percentage in the NBA history. We all know what he is, and yet you do it because it's what you want. So it's what your superstar wants. Now you end up tying up money into that player. Now this is, by the way, I know I'm getting a little off track here, but I've heard so many Nets fans now getting up and in on Sean Marks and what he is doing or not doing successfully as the GM of the Brooklyn Nets. Remember, not only did he give out that contract because he had to, he managed to turn that into assets. He got draft assets that became part of the Bruce Brown situation. Like everything that a GM of a superstar driven team has to do has to be reactionary because you have this third component. It's not just head coach and ownership and you, the GM. It's a fourth component of what do the stars want? What are they after? So sorry. And you know, what's so funny too, is like, I don't even know when you come in, if you're a superstar, I think you just, it's not that you want to be the end all be all decision maker. Some stars are different. But you want to feel like we're clearing the slate for me to come in, right? For me, whether it's going to be Kyrie first, then it was Kevin Durant, and now we're going to build this thing out from there. A guy that held over was Jacques Vaughn. Like, he managed to survive. Now, the Nets played him handsomely, and I would make the case that Kenny Atkinson would have been a good guy for the Nets to keep around. If you wanted to surround Steve Nash with talented coaches that had assistant coaching, a little bit of head coaching experience, more for Vaughn down in Orlando, but those two guys underneath, one defensive-minded, one offensive-minded, would have made for a good staff underneath Steve Nash. But I think you get swept up in this. Well, that coach isn't my coach. So how could he understand what I want to do? Right. And that's probably losing the forest for the trees a little bit if you're some of these NBA players, because these are lifers. Like, right, Kenny Atkinson is a lifer. He played in the NBA. He's been coaching. He's been on staffs in Atlanta and the Clippers and LA, Golden State, excuse me. It's like, this is all that they do. So the idea that not every coach is the same, but that they can't be adaptable to you, that you can't get in a room with them and figure out how to make it work while still satisfying both sides, is probably short-sighted in some instances. It's not always the case, but you can see talent on a coach staff and say, we're missing the mark here. Ime Udoka would be another example now, right? He's in Boston. I can tell you that it's on both sides there. Boston has been a very well-constructed team that had a lot of talent in place. And then Ime Udoka comes in. He says, hey, I have a couple little tweaks that we can make here, and we can be a team that's right back in the Eastern Conference Finals, potentially, in my first season.
Rob Pelinka, when he did his exit interview explaining Frank Vogel's firing to the degree that he was willing to be transparent and explain anything, the thing that kept coming up over and over was the idea of the Lakers needing more of a voice in their locker room from their coach. And it seemed like he felt like he needed more of a leader that everybody would have a buy-in towards. And it was interesting to hear that, just because I got a sense that Frank Vogel's voice wasn't carrying in that locker room as much as it had in the previous two seasons. It could be a combination of a lot of different things, but from what you saw, how would you rate Kenny Atkinson along those lines, particularly when you take into account of what this locker room is going to be?
Again, they didn't have any superstars, right? You don't really get that sample size. And I think D'Angelo Russell, if you want to make the case for it, it would be that D'Angelo Russell inaccurately thought that he was more than he was, right, in his time with the Lakers. So he had to kind of go through a humbling experience to build himself back up. Mm-hmm. Kenny was a part of that. I think that the Nets were filled with the Damari Carrolls of the world and the Allen Crabbs and the Quincy Aces, like guys that are born to be back end of the roster players that are always going to be ready to buy in, right? So do I think that the back X percentage of the roster in the locker room for the Lakers would buy into Kenny Atkinson? Yes. But when you hear that that Vogel lost the locker room, so to speak, well, what is that really saying? He lost LeBron, right? LeBron doesn't want to listen to him. Or now bring in Russell Wilson. I've done that. I do it all the time. Russell Westbrook. He played baseball, but I don't think he can transition to the NBA game. That bringing him in was a big component to that, right? Like, I think that those are probably the first two dominoes. And then Anthony Davis, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he feels like a go-along, get-along kind of guy, that if LeBron doesn't like something, he doesn't like it. And if LeBron likes it, Anthony likes it, right? So that's always what it comes down to. And this is it's not a problem. The NBA is talent-driven. You need to have superstars to win a championship. But how much does that outweigh all of the other perceptions in your locker room and the way that you want to construct your team?
But did you notice or hear about anything when it came to Kenny Atkinson in the 1 year that he was with Durant and Kyrie? And I know that was a weird year because KD was hurt, right?
Yeah. You get no Kevin Durant.
So with Kyrie. And Kyrie, get, after the beginning
get
of the
20
year,
games of, right. Of, right. of Kyrie Irving. So, yeah. So
was there anything you could even gauge in terms of his interactions with, I guess, more established superstars than a D'Angelo Russell that you could even try to guess how this would work?
Honestly, no. Like, I mean, you really can't, right? Because you can take Kyrie Irving's quotes. And I mean, even back then, and the more recent ones when Steve Nash was being hired on, right? Hey, maybe I'm a coach. Maybe KD's a coach. Maybe we're all coaches, right? And what I would say is, and Kevin Durant's come out recently and given a vouch of support for Steve Nash. And he said, one of the most important things a coach has to do is manage personalities, right? Manage the egos in the locker room. And I think Steve Nash, among other things, does that very well. I don't think that Kenny Atkinson is built for that. It doesn't mean that he hasn't evolved on it. And being underneath Steve Kerr, that might actually have helped him, right? Because Golden State has a lot of personalities. And when I say a lot, I mean Draymond Green, right? But being able to massage those things and have it work, if he's picked up some of that and he can find a way to massage the LeBrons and Russell Westbrook's and even Anthony Davis to get where you want to go, then that works.
And not every star needs to be massaged in the same way. So, you know, if you fail 100%. With KD and fail with Kyrie, that doesn't automatically mean you're going to fail with LeBron and AD.
Well, and so, and this is why I think it, here's what hurt Kenny Atkinson another way too, to that point. Not having Kevin Durant there and available to play. I think Kevin Durant is a very massageable personality with a head coach. I think he is very coach. Like, he is a guy that believes in the fundamentals of the NBA and how to, you know, be a team player. He's mentioned these kind of things. I think that he's a very coachable player. It's not that I don't think that Kyrie isn't coachable, but I think that he also has a lot of strong opinions of his own. So I think if you had had Kevin Durant there, I don't want to break any news here for you fellas.
That's important for you guys, considering he's making a lot of personnel decisions this offseason.
And but that's what I think the difference is. If you had had those players, maybe you would have got a better sample size. So that's what I think it comes down to. If Anthony Davis is kind of a go along, get along personality, and LeBron is ready to maybe take a little bit of that coaching, then I think Kenny Atkinson can work. But I was about to say before was, a season ago, I thought that Kenny Atkinson for the Knicks was the perfect thing to do. All this young talent, you want to develop RJ Barrett, right? You're going to end up with Obi Toppin and all these guys. And instead, the Knicks swing the other way, bring in more older players, retread a coach in Thibodeau. And the first season of it looked good. And now I think you're seeing the wear down effect of that. So, you know, that's, again, that's just where I envision Kenny. But it's hard to know now because he's a few years removed from where has he evolved from what he thinks he could do better now.
Last thing we want to ask you about this before, and we got some other Nets Lakers stuff we want to talk about. What does a Kenny Atkinson team look like? And just in terms of, like, you know, ideally, what kind of players would he have? How would they play offensively? What do they look like defensively?
Yeah. So at the time, so you're at the back end of Brook, you're at the beginning of Jared Allen. They also drafted Nicholas Claxton in that span. So I think more athleticism is what he wants to have. He wants to be a tempo team, move at pace, get up and down the court. You think about some of the 3-4 players, a little bit of switchability defensively. You want to be able to stay at home and pass off those assignments on that end of the floor. And he really instilled perimeter shooting. I mean, the NBA is built on that now, but that's what he focused so much on. And I was, maybe I'm selling him a little short and saying, oh, the young players, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie wasn't a rookie, right? Joe Harris wasn't a rookie. These were guys in their mid-20s that he was able to take. And from a Joe Harris perspective, it was developing some of those secondary attributes. Spencer Dinwiddie, it was getting him to be a little bit more of a facilitator and show that balance. And that's what he accomplished with D'Angelo Russell above all else was you need to be the point guard, right? You need to help run this team and make the right basketball play. In that vein, as much as I think I'm saying this is a bad fit potentially for the Lakers, we all know that LeBron James is one of few superstars who always wants, like, believes in the right basketball play. Sometimes, and this is going back maybe to his Cleveland days of saying to his detriment of, I make the right pass, right? To the open player on the wing, it's his shot to make, even though we all want the superstars to take the final shot at the buzzer. So it is fundamentals. Like, that's a lot of what he's predicated on: pace of play, good ball movement, sound ball movement. And I think it'd be interesting to look at the Lakers roster and say, how do you get more athletic and faster at multiple positions so that in and around LeBron, you get this flexibility and fluidity.
Four guys on it.
When you go down the list, it just
Don't do it like you did last year. If that's what you're looking for.
Telling you, the sum of spare parts is also what hurts these type of situations too. And this is where I think any NBA coach, right? You are at the pitfalls of some of your best players. If they want to be a part of it, if they want to help grow the team, then it works. And sometimes organizationally, like the Nets are right now, as are the Lakers, sometimes this is about hire Kenny Atkinson and 2 years from now, everyone will be blaming him when they tear the thing down, even though it has nothing to do with whoever you would put in there.
All right, Adam Armbrecht, you do this like we do every single day. You're breaking down the Nets like we break down the Lakers. It is not a happy time, although I will point out you made the playoffs and we did not. You didn't stay there very long, but you made it. And this is kind of a debate that we have on our show. Which team is worse off? Who would you rather be? And let's talk about just whether or not our team's models really even work in the NBA anymore. That's all next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it is impossible to stock all the parts you would need in a traditional chain storefront. And look, why would you spend 30%, 50%, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership anyway. Dummy, you mark, you rube, you sucker, because you can get it for way less at rockauto.com. For example, Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 on average at a chain store. I can tell you that's a ripoff because Rock Auto, they're selling it to you for $216. They're a family business. They've been serving auto part customers online for 20 years. So whether it's for your classic or a daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car, your truck, right? Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Adam, I assume like you do that you have a closet full of Honda Odyssey fuel pumps.
Oh, God, I tell you, when you see value, I think you go for it. You don't look back. And I'll get the car eventually. But listen, eventually. Good parts are good parts.
I agree. So who's Andy thinks Andy's been rightly wasn't a big fan of
such a terrible conversation.
Kyrie.
This is so awful that the Lakers and Nets are having this conversation,
but it's fascinating. I think why these teams are here is fascinating because I think like a lot of people, I thought the Lakers could make the finals this year. I'm pretty sure I had the Lakers in the finals, but Lakers Nets, I think was my final.
Popular prediction, if nothing else,
very. And it obviously was a monumental failure and injuries played a role and all that other stuff. But you also look at the models that these teams have. And I think the Lakers are a little bit worse off in terms of stuff that they have available to try to rebuild. But neither team is in particularly good shape. How do you think the sort of the model that these teams are working under has changed and perhaps become, you know, less
or
effective?
Do you think it's changed?
Do you think it's changed? Do you think it's become less effective?
Yeah, it's, you know, thinking back to when it was happening, right? When the whispers were in the wind of Kyrie coming in, it was all very exciting for Nets fan base and for Doug and I to be covering the team. And then it's Kevin Durant. I think what we're seeing is these windows become somewhat finite, right? And all of the sudden, when you are superstar talent heavy at a couple of spots, you then realize, well, if we don't capture it in the moment, and this is why I think the Lakers are in a better position because they already won the championship. Like that's why they're in a better spot, because they at least already accomplished it, right?
It's a good point.
The Brooklyn Nets are on this precipice of, well, we have Kevin Durant, and that's great. And out of both teams, I think a little bit younger than LeBron, right? You feel like he'd be the guy that either team would rather have as their centerpiece. But how do you get to the ultimate goal? Right? Because what ends up happening is you get these big contracts on the books. You can overpay and spend it to the luxury tax and keep your talent, but you can't go acquire any new talent. And you sacrifice a lot of draft picks when things happen. And to your point, I don't know if the model is as crystal clear as it once was, right? Get the superstars, fill in the pieces with veterans, and go win championships. And the problem is because more of the talent coming out of college now is more NBA ready than it used to be. Mm-hmm. 5-10 years ago, it looked a lot different. So now the way to replenish your team, it's like the NFL model, through the draft, fill in your holes through the draft, and then have some of the best talent making the most money on your books, because the veteran talent that you go out and get, and the Nets are a great example of this. Blake Griffin, really smart the first year, doesn't play DNP down the stretch of the season, doesn't see any playoff basketball. LaMarcus Aldridge, James Johnson, used extensively, nothing left there. Even though Patty Mills, by and large, played back to his average, you couldn't use him for various numbers of reasons. And I think what it comes down to is the veterans don't have this unknown upside. They have a very clear ceiling, right? Whereas the young talent, which the Nets also got some sample sizes of, specifically, even though you have Cam Thomas in the first round, Kessler Edwards, second round player. Is he the perfect prospect? No. Is he as athletic as he need to be? No. But he's a 3-and-D wing and the only one in existence on the Brooklyn Nets, right? And you can only go get that in the draft because it's few and far between the guys on the market that are both available and obtainable at your price point. So, no, I think there has been a little bit of this shift, and we've actually seen it, maybe the Nets getting in on it at exactly the wrong moment, to say nothing of all the external factors. Like maybe the worst possible 2 or 3 year run for, you know, outside things to be occurring around a franchise.
I think also, too, we're really seeing the value of a depth when it comes to the four teams still in the playoffs. But also, too, like when it comes to your superstars, the need for fit and that you can't force fit, whether you're talking about in skills on the court, but also personality and just that sometimes guys are not meant to be together for a reason. And, you know, the Lakers and the Nets have this commonality of superstars that were, you know, force-fed together as a grouping, and they all have various injury concerns other than, I guess, Russell Westbrook. He was the one guy of the six between the Lakers and the Nets, their superstar or superstar-paid players who didn't have any injury concerns, for better or for worse.
Russ, yeah, because Anthony Davis and LeBron are a perfect combination on the floor.
Well, if and when
that ever happened,
but that's part of what
Andy, you're talking about, right?
But there were very predictable reasons to be concerned about the personality fits on both the Laker and especially Brooklyn side of things, and there's an attitude often that just talent will paper over everything, and that can be the case. Laker fans know this; they watched Kobe and Shaq win three championships in a row, despite the fact that they couldn't stand each other. But more often than not, I think that type of fit, there has to be some commonality between everybody. There has to be some ways it works, or it can be very difficult to negotiate, especially when things aren't going well.
Well, and that's back to the top of the conversation, right? Coaching and who are the Lakers going to be bringing in? The players and how they fit together, like LeBron and AD, but what are the factors? Well, LeBron's getting older and Anthony Davis is a guy that just gets injured. It's said that, you know, that's as true as it is that Russell Westbrook never misses time. It's almost a guarantee that AD will. On the Nets side of things, I think to your point, while you can't jam guys together, everyone, it feels like you harken back to the Miami Heat with Bosh and Wade and LeBron. You go, yeah, but look at their skill sets. Like, it all added up there to bring those three superstars. One of the biggest things that we've kind of evolved on, and not that we didn't know it coming in, but maybe when they added Harden in briefly, you saw it was, oh, well, Kyrie doesn't want to play on ball. Like, he wants to be an off ball two guard. And that's why when Harden came in, he goes, you know what? You're the point guard. You do it, buddy. You do your thing and I'll work off of that. Now that you take him out, for better, worse, and different of those circumstances, now you look around this roster, Cam Thomas, not a true point guard. Bruce Brown, not a true point guard. And what you actually saw was when they picked up on the buyout market Dragic, it was, oh, even Dragic at his age, having not played the entire year, was able to walk in and go, yeah, you know what you need? A veteran point guard. Someone with experience, wants to be a facilitator first, wants to set the table for everybody else. And that's to your point of, I mean, Kevin Durant is, you plug him in with anybody, you're good to go. But now the Nets are looking at this thing and saying, well, who's that other piece then? And it can be Ben Simmons, and they're banking a lot of what ifs and caveats around it. But I think you're right. And that's where the disconnect is between players and teams and coaching staffs, right? The players go, we're all talented. We'll figure it out. Well, it's not Harlem Globetrotters, right? There has to be some level of fit and scheme and everyone functioning together in it. And that's where that's this divergent of, I think Kevin Durant and Kyrie like each other off the court. And I don't know if they make the connection of where the disconnect is on the court for them and being able to win games.
Well, it's funny. Like, one of the reasons I am more, I'm not really hyper optimistic about either team, but I'm more optimistic about the Nets than the Lakers. I actually am a big fan of Simmons, and I think he's been so devalued as to be like, people are treating him like he's just this trash player. Yeah. Like, he's really good. He's got flaws that are problematic, particularly in the postseason. But what he does well, he does incredibly well. And, you know, he's younger, and if he's healthy enough, I think we'll come back next year and play very well. I just think the culture aspect of this, in to kind of wrap it back to Atkinson, is where so much of this seemed to go off the rails, certainly for the Lakers, who had an incredibly strong culture in the bubble season. And it's gotten progressively worse since then. And maybe that's because guys have been injured and all that. But it's also, I think, Andy, you would probably agree, because they keep turning the roster over every 20 minutes. There's no continuity. There's no semblance of through line, which you need to create a culture. You need two or three guys who are there all the time. And they can't just be your superstars.
Well, it also helped, too, that in the first season with the exception of Kuzma, who, to his credit, I think really played ball and bought into what was being asked of him. And I think he did it with a really good attitude, but there was nobody other than him that could look at their role and reasonably say, A, I could do more than this, and B, it's important that I do more than this because of trying to grow my career. Everybody else was slated into a role that they could completely understand. And even if they thought, hey, you know what, I could take a few more shots, there wasn't an urgency for them to do it. In last season, the 2021 season and the 2022, you had a bunch of different guys who, for a variety of different reasons, wanted to be doing more. And I think that also added to the lack of continuity and, you know, being separated from each other during, you know, different parts of the pandemic and stuff like that. But, you know, this stuff matters when it comes to getting everybody on the same page. Everybody has to want the same thing, including Adam, getting to my long-running, very public theory about Kyrie Irving. I don't think Kyrie wants to play basketball full-time. I think that is a big issue that you're going to have, whether you're Brooklyn or wherever he plays.
Or the Lakers, because he's 7-1, according to the Bet Online guys, to come here if he doesn't stay in Brooklyn.
I don't think Kyrie wants to be a full-time basketball player. I think if he could find a way to be an independent contractor, like on a 1099 that just paid really well, what he would do. Well, and I think a lot of this other stuff, frankly, he is a legit conspiracy theorist. I think he is legit vaccine hesitant for a bunch of different reasons, but I think a lot of this just, he doesn't want to play full time, and these are very convenient excuses.
Well, so, and quickly, when you talk about, so I want to mention on the roster turnover piece of it, this is 2018-19. You always need to have a through thread of guys that are still here. Jared Allen, Damari Carroll, Ed Davis, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, who is still here, Caris LeVert, and also D'Angelo Russell, right? Only one of those handful of players that you could argue any number of them could still be a part of this team to varying degrees of, you know, importance and value. And that's where the Nets are now. When you talk about the young players, whether it's a Cam Thomas or a Kessler Edwards, or now Nicholas Claxton, do you bring him back, or Bruce Brown, do you pay him a little more to make sure that you keep him around? So that's that piece of it. And why I think it's even more important that they find a way to have a core nucleus of players that are kind of the identity of the team, is because this is what I think gets lost. Kyrie Irving, since he's been a Brooklyn Net, you know, now you don't want to speculate around how injured was he or wasn't he, right? The first season, it's the injury, only plays X number of games. The following year, it's birthday parties. He did start a family. He had children. That wasn't publicized. And also, a lot of people do. It's not a one or the other thing. There's issues that happen socially. Then it's COVID. And to your point, the hesitancy, all those things are fine. You can make any choice that you want to make. But the bottom line is, you can't, or an organization can't have you make any choice that you want to make without any sense of reliability. And it's why you heard Sean Marks. I don't know if you've seen this in recent memory where an NBA team looks at one their second best player and goes, we need to know that you want to be a part of it. Publicly says, we need to know that you're committed to this, because if not, we need to make different decisions, because we have Kevin Durant, and barring injury, Kevin Durant is 100% committed to this. What are we going to do over his next handful of games? And I know the next CBA is going to have that discussion around it, around you. Listen, if you're Kyrie Irving, you went into Sean Marks' office and said, I want to give you games this season and I'll be there for the playoffs. If you know it going in, I'll manage it. We'll figure that out, right? But I can't have it be that on an idle Tuesday, you might not show up, and we have to figure out what that looks like. And that's what influences panic moves, going, getting James Harden, sacrificing Jared Allen, who, as a lot of fans would say, fits perfectly what the Nets use right now on the roster. So you start to make a lot of these moves. And then even the move to Philly, while I think they got back, to your point, a great asset in Ben Simmons, if healthy, grossly being undervalued right now, being treated like he doesn't know what a basketball looks like. That was a byproduct of everything else that you had to choose. So you're doing the best you can in a lot of these scenarios, and maybe having to sacrifice guys along the way, like a Spencer Dinwiddie, who you couldn't afford to pay because you had these other bigger contracts. No, so there's big questions. Good news is, guys, it's not going well for either of us. And I don't think there's a real upside here, right? I don't think there's a lot of this has been good though.
Sell.
People wouldn't know NBA playoffs are going on right now. You wouldn't know it from listening to the Locked On Lakers or Locked On Nets podcast, but it is happening out there.
No, actually, really wouldn't. We haven't talked much about it. It's a very sore subject for people. Well, there's so much to this, like, that I just I think is fascinating. You mentioned, you know, Adam, that the rise in talent that gets better quicker. I think the almost their superstars are getting better and more plentiful. I think the scouting has gotten better. The coaching has gotten better. The scheming has gotten better. And as a result, the talent over all else model these two teams have employed just may not work. At least not as well as it used to. So much great stuff. Go make sure you check out Locked On Nets. Also, making sure that you check out One Giant Podcast if you're a Giants fan. My in-laws are Jets people, so we will not be listening. But other people are Giants people.
As long as you plug it, I'm happy. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to talk ill about your family or what goes on that side of the spectrum.
No, that really, it is strange. Like, apparently, like, that is, it's not like, oh, it's all New York. We can root for them if the Jets are out. Kind of like, no.
There's very strict division lines. If you're a Yankees fan, you're a Giants fan. If you're a Jets fan, you're a Mets fan. And then
yes.
The Devils are, right. Yeah, there's, oh, yeah, it's very clear. And they're, I don't have the same vitriol.
They are Rangers people. I don't know where that.
Yeah, that adds up. In. Yeah, a lot of Giants fans, Devils fans. So there you go. It's a full spectrum podcast. You're getting a lot of insights here.
Seems like your proximity to New Jersey is really going to end up dictating who you end up rooting for.
Especially if you're this guy, who fully lives in New Jersey.
There you go.
Thanks so much for coming on. The insight on Atkinson is great. It is always fun to wallow in the misery that is the two NBA teams that we cover. Let's do this again soon. You know, preview the next year's finals with the Lakers and Nets in it, rebuilt like Phoenix is rising
this time
from the ashes. Right. No,
Phoenix
seriously,
is too close to home. The Suns are going to be rising from them. But no, always love it, guys. Appreciate it. Always willing to do it.
Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the podcast early. Make sure you subscribe there. And of course, you can send us some notes or whatever at Cam Brothers on Twitter. All right. We'll see everybody Wednesday.